we're on the same brain wavelength. I guess, you know, entering into a new year, I guess for myself personally, the subject of time is, yeah, it's just kind of what you're thinking about. People make New Year's resolutions, what they're going to do, the things that they didn't accomplish in the year before. You know, they realize that the years aren't adding on to their life, so they want to do better in the coming year. You know, Aviel is going to turn 7 in a couple of weeks, and that blows my mind, because yesterday she was a baby and taking her home from the hospital. So we were on the same brain wavelength in wanting to talk about time. And Tom touched on a verse of scripture that I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper into and make some specific application and in regard to our new year, 2021. But the verse of scripture is found in Ephesians, the 5th chapter, verses 15 through 17. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. This verse of scripture, this passage we find in these couple of verses, the idea of walking circumspectly, or as some other translations render it, look carefully then how you walk, or pay careful attention how you live. You know, what an appropriate, and especially, I feel like, a timely verse to look at. You know, it's easy to go through life unaware. It's easy to get in a rut and a routine and to not really think about all that much what you're doing. You know, you get up, you go to work, you come home, you eat something, maybe watch something, and go to sleep. And that process repeats. And it's so easy to get into a routine. It's easy to not to start to not think about what you're actually doing. You know, I don't know what you would call it. I'm sure sociologists have some term for it. But it seems like in the entertainment world, in movies and in television, there's just this fixation on zombies. Mindless creatures roaming around, unaware of what they're doing, but yet so harmful to people. Right? I feel like it's so easy to get into zombie mentality. And what I mean is, joining the herds in wandering and roaming around, not completely unaware of your surroundings and what you're doing, and taking no thought into how you live your life. And every action that we take, every interaction, every word that we speak, every deed that we do has an action. Or has a consequence. There is a reaction to it. So I think part of this, walking circumspectly, is just paying attention to those around you, paying attention to the relationships that you have with each other, with our brothers and sisters, with those that are without. Being aware of opportunities that we have to serve other people, or we're going to get into that, but being aware of our surroundings, I'll leave it at that. And then the next part of this is, not as unwise, but as wise, or not as fools, but as wise. You know, the people that Paul was writing to were Christians at this. And maybe this is a little bit of a misapplication. Maybe it's a little bit more generic in his speaking, but I almost see it as, because he talks about similar types of behavior in other passages or in other places, or just earlier in the chapter. He's he talks about behaviors that are not becoming of a Christian and what to replace them with. And so I almost see this as the Apostle Paul saying, you know how to live your life. You guys are followers of Christ. You guys are disciples of His. Be as such. Live as such. Not as unwise or foolish, but as wise. In other words, you have come into the wisdom of God. You know about Christ. You know about His will. Execute it. That's almost kind of what I see him saying. But nevertheless, regardless, the kind of wisdom, making good and thoughtful decisions, this kind of wisdom is obviously guided by God's principles, and not and using those principles to mold and execute different things of your life. So I don't want to belabor that point at all. But redeeming the time, we get to verse 16. What does not going to beat a dead horse? Tom talked a little bit about this, but to redeem something. If I have a coupon. Like we use T-Mobile. As you know, Josh works at T-Mobile. So we use T-Mobile. And I don't know if other carriers have this kind of plan, but every Tuesday, if you have the T-Mobile app, you get some sort of gift that T-Mobile gives back to you. Most of the time, they go unused on my phone because I forget about them Now, for a while, they were pretty good. It was, get a free taco at Taco Bell or get a free donut someplace. Free food, sign me up, I'm in. for a while, the consumers were just redeemed those like crazy. I remember this one time, it was this sub sandwich from Subway. I forget which one it was. But you get a free 6-inch sandwich from Subway. If you had the T-Mobile app and use T-Mobile, you go redeem it, you hit the coupon. I went there for lunch. There was a line out the door at Subway. I've never had to stand in line out of a door for a Subway sandwich before. But hey, it's free. To redeem, unless I actively redeem that item, that coupon, whatever that is, I get nothing in return. There is no value of it to me if it's not redeemed. In the same way, so is our time. We're all given the same amount of time. I think about from a business financial standpoint, you think about all the wealth that has been created in a single person's lifetime. Sam Walton, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos. All these guys came from nothing. But yet in one lifetime, generated billions upon billions of dollars for our economy, employed tons of people, provided great service that we're all consumers of. They didn't have any more time than anybody else. But yet, because of the decisions that they made, they used it wisely and were able to create a very popular and profitable business, provided for their families very well, and not only their own, but for the families of others, their employees. Now, in a spiritual sense, how do we redeem the time? What are the things that we do with our time to make it of value? If you think back to the parable of the talent, well, what was a talent? We think of talent as an ability, but a talent was a sum of money in Jesus' day when he told this parable. A talent was a certain amount of money, to one, 10, to another, 5, to another, 1. Or something like that. I forget the divisions. Maybe it was 5 and 2 and 1. I can't recall. Either way, a sum of money is given to each one. They were expected to use that to gain more, create, do something with this that I'm giving you so that I can have a return on my investment when I come back. And we all know the story. We all know the parable. There's an expectation of us to use that which we have been given. And we have all been given time. We all have the same amount. So the question becomes, what do we do with it? Well, I want to make three specific applications of things that we can do with our time. Number one is to encourage each other. Number two, to exercise our function. And number three, to serve. One, encourage. In Acts, the fourth chapter, verse 36, we see the introduction of a character named Joseph, but who is called Barnabas for a reason. Barnabas in Hebrew means son of encouragement, literally bar and nabas. Bar meaning son of, nabas, encouragement. I don't know much about this character Joseph before we see him introduced in this scene, but if it's the same Barnabas, this is the same character that accompanied Paul, went on all sorts of missionary journeys. He was the one that vouched for Paul. If this is the same character, I don't know of another Barnabas. So if it's a different one, but if there were two sons of encouragement, I guess that's a good thing. But as far as I know, it was one and the same individual. But he was a companion of Paul, and he's the one that vouched for Paul, who was known as Saul, at the Damascus Road incident. You remember Paul was blinded for 3 days. And it was really Paul, or it was Barnabas that vouched for him. But literally the son of encouragement. I want us to think about this. This is not a nickname that he gave himself. Now Dan and I have nicknames that we have given ourselves working so much on our house together and our unstoppable, we're like the dynamic duo of home repairs. We have nicknames that we have given ourselves when we refer to each other. And certainly, we like to be called certain things. But this man, Joseph, I want to make a point that the apostles started calling him Barnabas. And it wasn't a nickname that he came up with for himself, by himself, or by himself for himself. It was a name that other people had given to him. Now, what does this say about his character? What does this say about who this Joseph fellow was, this Barnabas? Well, anyone that is so encouraging and so uplifting to be around, you have to make that a habit. That doesn't happen by accident. Certainly we get nicknames for traits that we have. And if people started calling him that, son of encouragement, why did they do that? Well, I can think of no other thing other than it was a habit of his to be encouraging and uplifting. He went with Paul on many missionary journeys. You can read through Acts. In one instance, and the one that has always fascinated me, is an instance in Acts the 15th chapter in verse 36. And there's not a whole lot of detail given, so I want to mentally explore the conversations that likely occurred. In Acts the 15th chapter, around verse 36, Paul and Barnabas decide to split ways over a a sharp disagreement that they had about a fellow apostle or disciple, John Mark. Now, he was accompanying them, this John Mark fellow was accompanying them for a while on different trips. For whatever reason, in Acts the 13th chapter, verse 13, this John Mark fellow, we're not really told why or given a whole lot of detail as to why, but he decides to just, in the middle of a trip, well, I guess after they reach a certain destination, he decides to go home. Go back to Jerusalem. Well, I assume that was his home. I'm not really sure. But I assume it was Jerusalem at that time. And it, regardless, he left. Well, this sharp disagreement that Paul and Barnabas had, they were going, I forget the name of the place, some Grecian name. But either way, they're going on this missionary journey. Barnabas wants to take John Mark with him. Paul doesn't want to. He said, he deserted us back in so-and-so. This fella doesn't deserve to go with us. I don't want to take him. I'm imagining this conversation, and it created a big fight. You know, to the degree that they literally couldn't work together. So they're like, okay, you go your way, I'll go mine. Barnabas took John Mark. Paul went by himself, I assume. Maybe another, someone unnamed went with him. Maybe he did have a companion in this journey, but as far as I know, Paul went by himself. Now, I'm the son of encouragement, taking this deserter. Why would he want to bring him along? Well, think about what the word encouragement is. And if you read past Acts the 13th chapter and you see everything that went on in chapters 13, 14, and 15, there's some pretty intimidating circumstances that that Paul and Barnabas faced after John Mark had left. So Paul and Barnabas went through all these things. I'm sure Paul said that he chose the easy way out. He didn't want to suffer as we suffered for the Lord. He doesn't deserve to go with us. He doesn't have the stomach for it. I imagine a conversation, something like this, took place. But you think of the idea of encouragement, the root word of that being courage. To instill courage in the mind of another. You only have to encourage if there is an element of fear or hesitancy about something. That's when encouragement really kicks in to high gear. Is if someone has trouble doing a particular task, they're afraid of something, they're afraid to do something, but yet they have a mentor, a friend, a guide that encourages them to push past that wall of fear to do whatever the task is. We're not told the circumstances. And again, I want to make it clear that what I'm talking about is really the conjecture in my mind of why Barnabas, the son of encouragement, would want to take along someone like John Mark. We're not told why John Mark left, but given the context clues that we have, I think it's a reasonable assumption to say that there was some sort of element of maybe fear, or hesitancy, or something along those lines that prevented John Mark to go any further with him. Paul was obviously hurt by that. And so, Barnabas, the son of encouragement, thought that it was probably a good idea that they take along this John Mark fellow and encourage him, to instill courage in him so they wouldn't face something like that in the future. Now again, this is not all at all something that is really explained and led into detail as to a summation of why these things happen. It is a conjecture on my part to really look deeper into the story and what happened and why things happened the way they did. Regardless, we're told of many examples where the Apostle Paul, other disciples, they met together, they encouraged one another, they strengthened one another. We have many examples of scriptures outside of this that describe this and detail this and encourage us to do that, to do the same with each other. Galatians 6 and 10 says, "Do good unto all, but especially those of the household of faith." Encourage. Let's use our time to encourage one another and encouraging one another to get past our fears. That's where encouragement really kicks in. Number two, exercising our function. Very quickly, I'm going to go through these 2 points. Exercising our function. Here's what I mean. 1 Corinthians 12, we have a chapter basically given entirely to talking about, well, what then were spiritual, were miraculous spiritual gifts. He talks about some had healing, some had tongues, some had prophecy. There were all these different gifts. Paul goes in to say that, you know, we were all, there many different gifts, many different functions that all of these had into the same goal of spreading the gospel and furthering God's kingdom, expanding and bolstering and strengthening the church. But even though there's a diversity of gifts, it all comes from the same source. It all comes from the same spirit, from the same faith. Everything comes from the same source, because evidently there were some apparently somehow or another some had gotten the idea, because I have such and such a gift, well, that makes mine more important or something, is really the idea that he's combating here. And Paul says, no, every part of the body is indispensable. Every gift has its purpose. Every spiritual gift. Not all had the same gift, yet all were just as important. Everyone was indispensable. So what is our application? Keep in mind, he's talking about miraculous gifts. The time of that has dissipated, right? The time of miraculous gifts, miraculous prophecy, miraculous healing, all that kind of stuff, it has faded away, as he talks about what happened in 1 Corinthians 13. So what is the application? What do we learn from? Identifying, number one, what is the spiritual gift, if you'll allow me to use that term, that we have, that you have, that you and I have? What is our strength? The leadership guru John Maxwell writes about and really advocates playing to your strengths. Not necessarily, you know, trying to overcome every weakness that you have, but playing to your strengths. What is our strength? How can we use it to strengthen the church and to spread the gospel? You know, we all have different abilities. We all have different functions. We all have different things that we bring to the table, different attributes, gifts, as it were. One may be the I believe that being a very hospitable person is a gift, right? That has a function. Being able to organize has a function. Being able to speak and talk and engage other people, being a warm, inviting person is a function. Yet, I don't think that all of these functions that make up the body, yes, play to our strengths, but there are many strengths that we can develop to become all that much stronger. Especially if there is something that if you've ever had the thought, well, I wish I could dot, 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 and then you make some excuse of why you can't. Well, the desire to do X, Y, Z, whatever you've thought that you said you want to do, well, that's a starting place. Now you just have to develop a plan to execute on it. I've wanted to do X, Y, Z. Let's say develop a video series on certain biblical topics and publish them online. Whatever it is. Have that be a way of outreach. It's in your power. It's within your power to do it. So in 2021, exercising our function as a body, working together so that the greatest good may be accomplished. Number three, to serve. We already touched on Galatians 6 and 10. In Acts, the third chapter, and Acts, the sixth chapter, are very good examples of serving. In Acts, the third chapter is an example of service that Peter and John performed on a crippled person that led to, that gave them the opportunity and opened the door for them to spread the gospel and teach Jesus, and very publicly, so that thousands later obeyed the gospel. All from one act of service that they performed for an unbeliever. That's huge. Acts, the sixth chapter, describes how there were so many needy people among the Christians that their numbers had grown so much. And because, you know, they remember, there had all these people come into Jerusalem for the day of Pentecost, and then the Spirit did not allow them to leave until sometime afterward. And so there were all these people that were in Jerusalem for, you know, who knows how long. They didn't know, obviously. They're just kind of taking it one day at a time. So they had all these people that had traveled there that had obeyed the gospel. They were there without resources. You know, they were away from their homes. It's not like they could go down to the ATM machine and draw out, you know, draw out some cash from the bank. You know, that's not really how it worked. And so, to help alleviate this, they shared all things that they had. They had all things in common, the scripture said. They shared what they had with the other believers that were there that could not yet go back to their homes. And if you read in Acts over something as simple as the distribution of food, there was a highly qualified process that they chose seven men. They appointed seven people to oversee. You know, it's something as distribution to those that are in need. And I guess we can kind of tie this into the last point. It's kind of why I wanted to put these two together. They kind of flow with each other. But it's easy for us to overlook something like that as, you know, not really a superior gift. You know, yeah, it's a great thing that they were so generous and things like that. But we tend to, or at least maybe in my mind I have, overlook the importance of generosity and hospitality, especially in a when you had all these people come in and they had nothing. But yet service was something that was greatly emphasized. Luke 14 and around the 12th verse, Jesus talks about, well, he's illustrating through a parable through the parable of the feast. But he gives an instruction. He says, when you throw a feast or when you have a feast, don't invite your friends, your neighbors, X, Y, Z. But invite the poor, the lame, the blind. What he's emphasizing there is when you're seeking to serve somebody, the service is really service when they have no way to return the favor. That's when it's really service. They have no way to repay. My mind immediately goes to the scene where King David searches out for Mephibosheth. And he's searching for Saul's last living relative that he can do some kindness to because of his oath that he made with Saul's son, Jonathan. They were best buds. And he searches out for Mephibosheth and he finds this cripple. He can't work. He can't fend for himself. Right, it's not like he can do some elaborate, you know, work with his mind to generate something for himself. Even you couldn't use your body, you couldn't physically do any labor. It was very tough for you to make a living. And yet King David found Mephibosheth and offered a kindness to him that Mephibosheth could never repay. And that is the same kindness that God showed to us when He gave us His Son. What a feast He has invited us to when we were poor, lame, crippled, blind. A spiritual pauper, nothing. I believe it's Isaiah that said, my righteousness. Even the very most righteous I could ever be is nothing but a pile of dirty rags. It's dirty laundry. It's a stinky, smelly pile of manure compared to the righteousness and holiness of God. But yet, that kindness and grace was reached out to us, and we partake of a spiritual feast in communion with God daily, and certainly for eternity, because of the grace of His Son, for God's grace in giving us His Son. And that's the kind of attitude we are to have toward other people, both within the body and without. Everyone deserves an invitation to that feast, but nevertheless, that's our lesson for this afternoon. Encouraging, exercising our functions and serving in 2021. May it be a greater year and a more profitable year in the Lord's work than we have ever had previously in our lives, in this local work, and through the church the world over. There's one that needs to utilize the services of the church. Please make your desire known as we stand and as we sing the invitation song select.